Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Fire it up. Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And we'd like to thank you for tuning in. So today on the Voice of Yoga, we'll be talking about transcending the limits of just seeing yourself as a separate entity. In this show, we will discuss the ongoing struggle between matter and spirit as the law of karma. Listen as we explain apotheosis as the process of becoming divine and giving up the confinement of mortality. Ignorance is when we mistake the mortal for the immortal. The Bible explains it by sowing to the flesh versus sowing to the spirit. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are Talking Consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and experience total consciousness. So Swami, let's get right to it. Let's talk about transcending the limits of seeing ourselves as separate. What does that mean?
Yeah, transcending implies rising above or moving beyond something. So with regard to this whole thing of apotheosis, moving from material means to spiritual means, that there is some point of transition. In Kriya Yoga, we call it initiation. That if we continue to live instinctually by thinking, breathing, eating, sleeping, fornicating, we will survive, but we will not grow. And this whole thing of moving from a personal sense to a impersonal spiritual sense of selfhood is really where our potential lies. But it's going to require us to do something. And so the terms that we use are things like transformation or transcending. They're not just words, but they're experiences that are equated with changes that we actually make.
So the title of the show is Personal Sense Resents the Absolute. Now, is this something that we unconsciously do?
Well, I think it's part of the fabric of the human experience, that the human being is a very complex being. And there's something within us that's of an animal nature, that's something within us that's of a human nature, there's something that's within us of a divine nature. And everything is going to be dependent upon what it is that we identify with, whatever it is that we accept as our true sense of being. Now, it seems like, and especially since this second creation in Genesis and the fall from Eden in the Bible, that we incarnate with an attraction for things visible and tangible. And that I really like the term the original sin, because it makes sense to me. Because sin being an archery term missing the mark, it means that we come in and we desire something visible and tangible. But our potential lies in what is invisible and intangible. So there's this kind of conflict that goes on, that we want to remain with what's safe, familiar, comfortable, and known, but then we're haunted by this innate drive that we want to be whole and we want to be complete. And so the personal sense is what we come in with. We come in and we identify with our bodies and we see ourselves as separate entities for the most part, I mean, that's what we live out of. And that's where all of our problems lie. Because we're disconnected from this hidden potential. We're disconnected from the perfection of being. We're disconnected from the Creator. And so in order for us to unlock this potential, we have a responsibility. We have to do something. And so the term transcend that we talked about is one that covers it, or transform, or initiate. Yes, so in the interplay between matter, mind, and spirit, our personal sense of I, really, it resists losing its jurisdiction. It loses its authority. It loses its hold on our identity. And there's a lot of reasons why that happens.
I was just going to ask you if you could give us some examples. If living in the absolute is pure goodness, you know, from the divine, how come we don't want that? Why do we resist that when it sounds like that is exactly what we want? And that's why we have struggle, is because we're seeking that. We don't even know that we're seeking it.
Yeah. And the best explanation I've heard for this is that we are basically hypnotized. And we don't even know who we are. And so we're in the shadow of truth. We're kind of in this imitation of the divine mind, the will of God. And in order for it to maintain itself, it has to uphold our attention. The only existence that this false sense of existence relies on comes from our belief in it. And as long as we're hypnotized, then we hold our attention on it. And it kind of keeps us in the realms of duality. It keeps us in a belief in two powers. And it perpetuates this ongoing struggle that, you know, we identify as the law of karma.
Okay, Swami, so I've heard you say several occasions when you have talked about the physics of spirituality. I was wondering if maybe you could review that with our listeners today.
Yeah, that's an important thing, that the physics of spirituality that we use is like attracts like, and two things can't occupy the same space at the same time. That's why this concept of spirituality is not just an academic accomplishment. It's not just an intellectual achievement. It's not something you're going to get from a book. Again, we must transform. The like attracts like kind of gives us, I think, the ultimate clue that if we are attracted to particles and waves, if we are attracted to duality, which is fear and limitation, then that's what we become. But if we are attracted to the invisible intangible, the sustaining source of the infinite, then that's what we become. And so that's why I've kind of coined the phrase the physics of spirituality, because it requires us to do something. It implies that it's much more than just a thought that we might have.
Okay, so why is it called the physics of spirituality? It sounds contradictory.
Well, yeah, it is contradictory. But what I've noticed is that there is something that must happen to unite matter and spirit, that they're disconnected and they're separate in our original state of consciousness. And again, it's not just an academic accomplishment. It's not just a phrase that you learn that you can recite, that there's something that has to happen in order for us to actualize it. So that was kind of why I chose that phrase. that the spiritualization of consciousness changes the perspective, and at the same time, it's going to change the external images. Yeah, again, there's something that has to happen that activates the transition from material law, the law of karma, into spiritual law, which is the law of harmony, the law of love. And so that, I think, is the main reason why I chose that phrase, the physics of spirituality.
I have a question for you regarding karma, and maybe some of our listeners might be thinking the same thing. But I guess through my readings throughout the years, I have heard and read that we want to try to get off of this karmic wheel. And how does that relate to what we're talking about here?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. In order to get off of the karmic wheel, we have to transcend. We have to rise above the cycle of death and rebirth. And in the framework of doing this, we have to accept a completely different identity. That you can't be a material mortal being and at the same time transcend the law of karma. So in order to transcend the law of karma, you have to become an eternal spiritual being. But in reality, we're already an eternal spiritual being, but we think we are a material mortal being. And so in the process of this awakening, where we break the mesmerism of this trance that we're in, that we need to do something. And that's where these terms, I think, transcend, transform, come into play.
So I think I need a little bit of clarification. I think I was either reading from Joel Goldsmith or maybe Herb Fitch that the claim was that there really is no such thing as karma. So I guess I'm just a little confused by that and wondering if you could, like I said, clarify that for us.
Yeah, see, they're really, the law of karma is the law of matter, and it's not backed by principle. So in other words, God did not create karma. God did not create matter. And so the only thing that really sustains its existence is human belief in it. And as a result, it falls into the shadow of truth, which means that it isn't real because it's not self-existent. The only thing that is self-existent is what God creates, holds, governs, and maintains under the divine law of life. But the law of karma is just the shadow of truth. It's not real.
Is it real if we believe in it? Is that another one of those situations? If we have a belief in it, then that's what will happen to us?
Yeah. And until you give up the belief in it, it will continue to perpetuate itself. And that's why what we say, you know, sin, sickness, suffering, death, these are all human beliefs because God did not create them. But then it gets a little bit deeper than that because it's not just my human mind that believes in it. Because we are also being hypnotized by the world mind, which is the shadow of the divine mind. And a lot of us, we don't even know what's motivating us because most of this motivation comes from the hypnotism of the world mind.
Well, we're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we will return in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and the 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, I have one more thought about karma, and I've heard people talk about that they believe that we keep coming back and experiencing different lifetimes because we have these life lessons that we have to learn, and therefore that sets the karmic wheel. But you know, the more reading that I've done and listening to some other lectures and so on, is that I'm thinking that the reason why we keep coming back is because we have to learn to not be judgmental. What I mean by that is we need to not look through mortal eyes or hear with mortal ears and speak with mortal tongue. We have to operate from the divine mind.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We have to move from the testimony of our senses, our five sense mind, the lower mind, and we have to activate the higher mind, which is, it's not going to happen by itself. And I think that's really the only lesson that we need, that it's not something that is very individual to each person, but it's kind of almost like a generic formula that one size fits all. But once you can figure out exactly what the instruction in Scripture is really saying, there's a lot of reasons why things aren't working for people, and a lot of it has to do with our misinterpretation of the texts. You know, a simple one is the concept of living out from the heart. That's a phrase that I think a lot of people think that means giving rein to your feelings, which means that you're emotional and you're controlled by your five sense mind. Now, that is not going to bring you to liberation. But if you have a better understanding of the term living out from the heart, and the best definition I've seen, which I got from Palmer on the Living the Authentic Christ Life Facebook group, that the heart is when the mind moves into its rightful position as an avenue of awareness. And what I found that's of the utmost importance is that the mind has to move into this rightful position as an avenue of awareness of truth. That it can't just be an avenue of awareness of anything, because you could be aware of your feelings. You could be aware of your five sense mind. And that's not going to bring you to a position where you're going to break the hypnotism.
When you were talking about living out from the heart, it reminded me that I had heard somebody years ago, we were talking about the chakra system, and this person was saying to the group that most of humanity is living through their lower chakra systems, and nobody's living up above into the heart chakra and above. Would you think that that's an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of explaining it. Using the chakra system kind of gives you a diagram that you can work with. And I really like having schematics. And so most of us, like you say, I mean, we don't get out of security, sensation, and personal power to actually move into the heart. And then a lot of us think living out from the heart is giving rein to our feelings, which is really where you're more fear-based. You're still living out of this limited sense of body-bound awareness. You're driven by instinct, appetite, preservation, and survival. And with a lot of the misconceptions that are out here today, we actually think that by doing this, we're being spiritual.
Well, I like what we say in the summary of our show today, where we have ignorance is when we mistake the mortal for the immortal. And the Bible explains it by sowing to the flesh versus sowing to the spirit. And I think we've been kind of talking about that throughout this show. Does it mean that sowing to the flesh is keeping ourselves in the material world, and sowing to the spirit would be us turning towards the divine mind?
Right. To sow to the spirit, because I really like in the Bible where it says, ask in my name and it shall be given to you. Because to ask in my name really implies that we must know ourselves in the way that we are known by divine mind. And God created us in God's image and likeness, which means that we are spirit. We are eternal spiritual beings. And we must know ourselves as an eternal spiritual being in order for us to even communicate with divine mind. In fact, it is our acknowledgement of the presence of divine law that activates it in our consciousness. And that was referred to as the Christ. The Christ is what makes the presence of divine law intelligible to human consciousness.
I was wondering if we can give an example of that. For example, this morning I was at the beach and I wanted to go in for a swim. The ocean was pretty warm for up here in New England. But I actually was, I guess I ended up being afraid to go in because the water was, you know, the waves were coming in pretty high and strong for me. And so I didn't go in for my swim that I usually did. And I remember telling you about it. And you said, well, I was afraid in that I didn't see the ocean as God, as divine. I was wondering maybe you could expound upon that example for our listeners.
Yeah, that I think is a great example that you're putting here. And to unbox that, when you're looking at it, where does the fear come from? Because here in that particular incident, you're identifying with your body. And the fear comes from the body because its knee-jerk response is to protect itself. And the testimony of your senses is showing you that you are being confronted by an environment that is threatening to the well-being of your separate sense of self. And see, that is sowing to the flesh. Now, to sow to the spirit would really mean that you would have to transcend the limits of seeing yourself as separate. Which means now that you would have to expand your identity beyond your physical body. And from that more inclusive point of identification, then you would start to see that what surrounds you is within you. And that, again, coming back to what we had said earlier, ask in my name, that if you identify with yourself as an eternal spiritual being, and you recognize that, here I really like to refer to the biblical term, I and the Father are one. The same soul that's animating you is really appearing before you as a wave. Only you're not seeing it as the perfection of being. You're not seeing it as divine law revealing itself before you. And how you perceive it is how it's gonna, how it will externalize in your reality. So in other words, if you saw that wave coming at you as fear not, it is I, the I am that they talk about in the Bible, that this was divine law appearing before you and knowing that divine law is pure goodness. It is life itself, that there is no possibility of you ever being in a life-threatening situation. Because first of all, you are an eternal spiritual being. Your identity is not limited to the body, nor dependent upon anything physical. And that what surrounds you is within you, that everything around you that is appearing in your senses is the presence of divine love. Then that creates a completely different external image.
All right, so I'm sure it's not as simple as us, you know, before we enter the dark room or before we walk into the office for the job interview or whatever it is that might give us anxiety. I'm sure it's not as simple as just saying, fear not, it is I. I'm sure it's much more than that.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, we can use this spiritual concept, that we can play the spiritual card in order for us to accommodate our human experiences and the testimony of our senses, that we actually have to become spirit. Our identity has to lose its material sense of self. And that's why the personal sense resents the absolute. In the Bible, they call it putting off the old man, that the change has to go deeper, that we become something completely different. And that's why we use and we talk a lot about apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. And in this transformation and in this transcendence of material beliefs and material values and a material identity, we now accept a impersonal spiritual sense of selfhood that is backed by divine law, that has the power of principle behind it. And so you're not senselessly optimistic and playing the spiritual card. That what the Bible's telling you, that when you ask in my name, when you ask in your divine likeness, that it shall be given to you. But what you're doing is you're harmonizing yourself with the creative principle. You are harmonizing yourself with divine law, which is the law of love, the law of harmony. And it externalizes itself as the perfection of being.
Well, this is a great place. I think we should start ending our program. So listeners, be sure to visit the website. It's www.ipdtransform.com. And once you're there, we have all kinds of tools on that website to continue your learning experiences. Be sure to listen to our Facebook Live videos that we air every Wednesday at 5 p.m. So, Swami, do you have any other final thoughts or comments about today's program?
Well, I would like to wish everybody success with their overcoming the limits of body-bound awareness and giving up their personal sense of I for an impersonal sense of spiritual selfhood. And with that, I wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda. We'll be signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.